Hi, my name is Frank, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm freezing my ass off. Bobby, you've got to do something about that air conditioning. Now, there must be a way we can at least turn it down. See, when we get warm, then we can turn it up. Then when we get cold, we can turn it down again. I spoke at the first Cajun conference. There's no question about that. Tomorrow you'll probably think I spoke last week here. And after I spoke at the first Cajun conference, I thought it'd be the last Cajun conference, I'll tell you. It was really an impressive little thing. Now, some of you think I have an accent. I want you to know that I didn't have an accent when I got on the plane in Chicago. I got this accent when I got off the plane in Lafayette. So if you don't understand me, that's okay, because I don't understand you half the time. We're going to have fun here. We're not going to... I don't know how you do things here. We're going to do them the way we do them back home, because that's the only thing I know. It doesn't make it right. Maybe what you do here is right. But what we're going to do is we're going to share. We're going to all be in these tapes if there's going to be tapes. Because this is about sharing, I think. And we're not going to be sitting here for hours reading a book. You can do that at home. And I'm not a teacher. And you, I don't think you're going to learn anything or gain anything if you listen to me read, because I'm not a good reader. Now, I was told that the subject or the title of this workshop is Spirituality Through the Steps. I'll tell you what, we could have doubled the crowd had we called it Sexuality Through the Steps. AA is packaging. Sometimes the way we label things discourage people. Isn't that funny? Because spiritual, that sounds like it's good or holy, maybe holy. I don't know how, what spiritual, if you hear that word spiritual, what do you think it means? I don't know. Holy, godlike, God-fearing, I don't know. I'm not holy. If you wanted a holy man, you could have found him here, I guarantee you that. You didn't have to reach out to Chicago to find that. My sobriety date is November 3rd, 1971. And by some standards, that's a long time. Other standards, it's a short time. Now, we don't have any format here today, and I'm going to guarantee you one thing. We're not going to be here as long as this program was planned, because I don't want to make this a tedious thing. See, one of the strange phenomena about people in Alcoholics Anonymous, the people that should be here aren't here. The people that are here don't need to be here. And that's phenomenal. I mean, that's true. Your willingness to take out of your life a day after you've worked all week to come here indicates to me that your willingness would carry you to do whatever action is necessary to lead a better life. And just by coming here, you've proven that. Unfortunately, people that really need to be here don't come here. And that's kind of the story of Alcoholics Anonymous, I think. Most of the people that need this program don't come to this program. And so many people that come here don't stay here. How many people in this room today have longer continuous sobriety than me? Two. You know, that's a sad commentary on Alcoholics Anonymous. We've had 54 years to acquire old-timers. We've had 54 years to acquire old-timers. And yet the newcomers each and every year outnumber the old-timers 10, 20, 30 to 1. And you know, we all think about that all the time. I go around the country, I do a lot of talking in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I hear people talk like, oh my God, Alcoholics Anonymous is growing and growing and growing and growing. I don't think it is. It barely grows in proportion to the population explosion. When I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, the population of the United States was almost one half of what it is today. The growth of Alcoholics Anonymous is that it's grown less than the population, proportionately. Isn't that weird? Now, if you hear that, you can say to yourself, well, is he saying that Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't work? No, I'm not saying that at all. I think there's a certain dilemma about the disease of alcoholism that's not true in any other illness. This is the strangest illness. This is an illness as while it's killing you, it's telling you you're okay. It's their fault. You don't really have a problem. You're not dying. And the sufferer from this illness doesn't want to get well. Won't do anything to get well. Will talk sometimes like they want to get well. Give some lip service to something, but to take any action. And I believe that most people in Alcoholics Anonymous never take the steps. I think that most people in Alcoholics Anonymous cheat themselves. I think they talk about the steps and they pretend they take the steps, or they kind of take the steps, or they're going to take the steps. But the actual taking of 12 simple actions or surrenders is so overwhelming to them, so threatening to them, that they refuse to do it. And the shame of it is a lot of old-timers don't take steps either. And I wonder why that is. I was giving a talk in Canada a couple of years ago. And I said, I think there's a hypocrisy about many of us in Alcoholics Anonymous. Sometimes we sit in these meetings for years until the rest of the people assume we're getting better. Newcomers keep coming in and we become elders 2 years, 3 years, 4 years sober. They presume we've taken the steps and we live on that presumption. We live on that presumption. And I said that I really think that most of us in Alcoholics Anonymous cheat ourselves. In a kind of a way, I think a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous live a lie in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went into that and I said, it's not, I'm just as guilty of that as anybody else. I mean, when are we going to stop cheating ourselves? When are we going to privately simply do what is the only suggested program of recovery given to us by Alcoholics Anonymous? And after that meeting, a guy who was a high profile, big shot in Alcoholics Anonymous, a wonderful man, sober 37 years, came up to me and said, can I talk to you? I said, sure. We went outside, and he started to cry. He said, I've been a delegate. I've been this, I've been that, I've been this, I've been that. I sponsored hundreds of people. Everybody, I'm the oldest sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous in my city. He said, you know, I haven't ever taken a step. He said, I've kind of taken a step. I've never written an inventory. I've never taken a fifth step. I never made any list of people I had harmed. He said, you know what it's been like the last 20 years? He said, it's been like hell. But I pretended for the newcomers. Keep coming back. Gets better and better. He said, you know, I don't care if I live or die. He said, I can't even get up anymore in front of these people because I just can't tell another lie. And I said to him what I say to other people who are in that dilemma. You know, it doesn't say when you have to take the steps. When the pain is sufficient, if that pain is after 3 years or 3 months or 3 days or 30 years, the grace of God just doesn't come to us when we're newcomers. The grace of God doesn't just come to us the day before or the night before the morning we join Alcoholics Anonymous. The grace of God is a continual flow. Never is unavailable. And you know there's nothing wrong if you have skipped taking these actions, start taking them after a year or three or five or 10 or 20 or 30. There's nothing wrong with that. You don't have to announce that to the world. You can just do it. You can just do it. Because I think that's the difference between staying here and leaving here. That's my opinion. Now let me just tell you this. Whatever you hear from me today is my opinion. I have no credentials of any kind. I am not appointed or anointed. Okay? No one has sat in judgment and said, yep, he's our man. Nope. I have no special insights or understandings. And I have not gone to any schools or taken any counselor's courses. I haven't been certified by a treatment center or a hospital. I'm just a member of Alcoholics Anonymous who's been sober since November 3rd, 1971. And I'm a good observer. I'm a good listener. And my life's at stake. See, this is not a social function for me, membership in Alcoholics Anonymous. I believe my life is at stake. Now, it's not life like my heart'll stop if I don't come here. No. And then I'm not afraid that if I drink again, I'll die. Nope. I'm afraid if I drink again that I won't die. And I'll have to live like that. 1, 2, 10, 20, 30 years. That's what I'm afraid of. And now I come to Alcoholics Anonymous because I like to be in Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't think that if I didn't come here this weekend that I'd get drunk tonight or tomorrow. I don't believe that if I stopped going to meetings next week and the week after that I'd get drunk. I think that the quality of my life would slowly deteriorate. Because I've had that experience in Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know if you have. There have been times in my almost 18 years of sobriety that I have taken little vacations from Alcoholics Anonymous. Sometimes it's like, I'm going to take a vacation. And I'll be gone for a couple weeks. Well, I know they have AA meetings there, but I think I'll just kind of relax and have fun and just, I owe it to myself. I'm not going to go to any of those meetings. It doesn't take too long for everyone around me to know that I'm not going to meetings. I start to become critical. I start to become impatient. I start to become restless, and on and on and on. And that, you see, I think that alcoholism is a disease that continues into sobriety. Some people don't think that. There seems to be two kinds of people that come into Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm sure there's a lot of categories. But I seem to be able to identify at least two. First part class of people come in here believing, and they'll argue and argue and argue that the only problem in their life is they drank too much, too often. And that the purpose and goal of Alcoholics Anonymous is to become sober and to stay sober. And for them, that may be true. For me and my class, that's not true. There's more wrong with me. There always has been, and there always will be, more wrong with me than I drank too much, too often. I'm sober long enough to know that sober can be crappy. Sober can be full of fear, anxiety, depression. See, I'm sober long enough that I know that's true. For me, not for you. See, you got to remember, I'm not saying anything for you. I don't know you. And even if I did, I would not be qualified to make any judgments about you. Because I don't live in you. You do. And you're the authority on you. So if I say anything that you disagree with, not only are you wrong, no, I don't mean that. That's what. If I say anything that you disagree with, don't get mad at me. That's how I see it, for me. And I share it because if you're like me, you may see it that way too. And if you don't, okay. That's why we have a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous that speak from these microphones. Because everyone sees and understands everything differently. And no one is right. And no one is wrong. It's how you feel and how you see it today. Now, the most wonderful thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is, if you keep an open mind, you'll discover that what you were certain was true today, maybe tomorrow, you won't think was so true. That's called growth. You see, our opinions and our judgments and our values change in recovery. And that's why I try not anymore to be so dogmatic. When I was new, and I was sober a year, I knew what was true in Alcoholics Anonymous, what wasn't. What was right and what wasn't. I thought I knew that. Now I don't know that I know any of that. See, I'm sober long enough now to probably have identified the questions. The answers keep changing as I keep changing. And that's what I think Alcoholics Anonymous is. I think Alcoholics Anonymous is an adventure in living. I think it has little or nothing to do with drinking. It has to do with living sober and being able to stand living sober with me. Now, when people tell me, well, no, that's not what AA is about. AA is about not drinking. Then I accuse Dr. Bob and Bill Wilson of being liars. And they must have been so mentally ill that they would perpetuate a hoax on millions of people who were to follow them because they lied to me. When they wrote this book, if the purpose of Alcoholics Anonymous was not to drink, why didn't they say the first step and the program of recovery is do not drink alcohol? Why didn't they tell me that? What were they trying to do? Play some kind of mind game? Were they so sick that they wanted to bury the truth? Or did they not want people like me to get well? Why didn't they say that? Why didn't they say, look it, you want to get well? Don't drink. They never said that. What happened is, over this, as I understand it, and as I have observed it, and as I have been taught, we have, some of us, so watered down Alcoholics Anonymous that we have really almost changed its total identity in an effort to solicit membership and to help other people. These slogans and these statements that you hear and you see on walls and you see on bumper stickers have nothing to do with the recovery process in Alcoholics Anonymous. They are helpful, comforting, and useful gimmicks. But they are gimmicks. They are good, and they help, but they're not the program of recovery. In addition to the program of recovery, they augment that program of recovery. What's happened sometimes, as AA traveled west, north, and south from its beginning, the message was carried by people, and they invented these things. Over the course of years, sometimes we replace the program of recovery with these gimmicks. And then we wonder why people don't stay here. Why don't they get well? Why aren't they so happy they just keep coming back? Because you can only get so well on one day at a time. You can only get so well on live and get let live. You can only get so well saying keep it simple, stupid. You can only get so well on easy does it. And I really think that's kind of the dilemma of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I'm going to repeat a statement I made earlier. More people leave AA than stay in AA. More people leave AA than stay in AA. And that's not because Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't work. The truth of the matter is, I think, Alcoholics Anonymous works nearly 100% of the time. Most alcoholics don't do what's suggested as the only program of recovery by Alcoholics Anonymous. They simply refuse to do it. And they all have their own justifications of why their case is different. You know, when they wrote this book in When this book came out in 1939, I'm just going to read just a little something that I'd like to talk to you about. They put in a chapter and they said, we'll call this chapter How It Works. Here's what they said. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. That means that between 1935 and 1939, their observation was that people who did the subsequently listed things almost to a person succeeded in effectuating a recovery. Rarely have we seen anyone fail. That translated means hardly ever doesn't it work. Or opposite, the flip side is, it almost always works. Who have thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. Simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. Those are the only people they've ever seen not make it. That's what it says here. And I don't think they were so mentally ill that they put things in this book to hurt or mislead or misguide people like me. They said, our experience is that, and our observation is, since we started this thing in 1935, hundreds and hundreds of people have come through, and hardly to a man or woman has anyone failed who have done these things. And the only people who seem to have failed are people who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. Not with us, not with their wives, their employers, the police, the courts, themselves. This is a simple program, they said here. They are such unfortunates. They're not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. I read that, and I took offense. When I first read that, I thought, I wasn't born that way. I wasn't born incapable of being honest with myself. I don't know who they were talking about. You know where I was born? I was born a little kid that believed in Santa Claus. I was born a little kid that believed in God. I was born a little kid. I was a little kid. I was 3 and I was 4. There was no lack of honesty. To be dishonest was an exception to the rule. I was a good little kid. Didn't want to hurt anybody. Didn't want to be hurt. I didn't go around when I was started to walk punching people in the nose. I thought this was a nice life. There was the Easter Bunny and the Tooth Fairy and Santa Claus. It was when I was about 20 and I found out there wasn't a Santa Claus that I started having my problems. These people that fail, this book says, seem to be incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living that demands rigorous honesty. That's all this program, it says, demands. Rigorous honesty. Now, maybe they shouldn't put the word rigorous in there, because I don't know what rigorous means. But it sounds awful. Doesn't it? I mean, what's rigorous? Do you have any idea what rigorous is, sir?
Unbending.
Was it?
Unbending.
Okay. And when you're new, the gentleman said unbending. And when you're new, that threatened me. Because I, by the time I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, have lied so much. My life is a lie. I am a lie. I don't know how not to lie. It would seem to me, when I'm new, that rigorous, unbending is impossible to me. It would be like purity, perfectionism. Perfect. And I know I'm incapable of that. Rigorous is maybe unbending. Maybe it's not as unbending as unbending. Maybe it's more forgiving than unbending. I think that now, at this stage in my sobriety, I would say, for me, it's unbending. On November 3rd, 1971, it was, do the best you can. Be as honest as you can. Risk it. Risk being honest just a little bit. Just open the door a little bit. Just tell one truth. Tell somebody, I'm scared. I'm in trouble. Or the worst thing of all, maybe I'm rigorous if I just say, I need help. Maybe. I don't know. The chances are less than average. There are those who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories, in a general way, disclose what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. I'm going to tell you, the dilemma of alcoholism as I see it. Right now, back in my group, three people who have inoperable cancer. Doctors in each case have held certain hopes for each one of them. Tell you about a story. 6 years ago, one of the guys that I sponsor came to me, and he said, my wife has just been diagnosed having a very strange and rare muscle cancer. Some sort of a cancer of the muscle. Now, I'm not a doctor, and I'm not going to be able to really explain this to you, but just to tell you that that's what it was. And somehow, this lump on her back grew, and it was first misdiagnosed by a doctor who operated, and then it grew back a few months later. And then she went to a teaching hospital near Chicago, and they said that she had something, a form of cancer, that they've only seen in medical history 20 or 30 times, that's been documented in the medical books. Her name is Joan. And after all the tests, the surgeon said to Joan, there's only one chance if you want to live. We have to cut you in half. What we have to do, Joni, is we got to take your body and we've got to cut you from the neck straight down to the hip. Now, you're going to lose your shoulder and your arm and your breast, half of your chest and half of your back. Now, if you do that, there's a chance you will live. Know what Joni did? She got the operation. And I tell you, the night before the operation, Joni's not a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Her husband is. The night before the operation, Joni asked me to come to the hospital. She wanted to talk to me. And when I got to the hospital, what she wanted to talk about is how John was going to take this. Isn't that amazing? Now I'm going to tell you, that's proof. Joan's not an alcoholic. She's concerned with how John was going to be able to handle this. And something happened that just brought me, it got my attention. While she talked to me, she manicured her nails on the arm that they were going to remove in the morning. Now, I just know that this wasn't a conscious... She just did it, because I guess she always did it. And she's talking to me. She's filing these nails and putting on this nail polish. And I can't stop looking at that arm, because I'm saying to myself, Joni, they're going to throw that arm in the garbage in the morning. In my mind, she wanted to talk about how John was going to handle it. And she also said to me that the reason she was going to do this is because she wanted to live. She said, Frank, there are beaches I have yet to walk. She had the operation. And she's half a lady. She's a whole lady, but she's half a lady. She just wanted to live, because she was certain that without that operation, she would die. Alcoholics come here, and they don't have that certainty. They mustn't believe they're going to die, or their quality of life will be so diminished that life will have no meaning. Because if they did, wouldn't they take these simple steps? If a doctor, if you were losing your sight, you're going to be blind in a month. And the doctor said, now all you have to do, and it's hardly ever failed, all you got to do is these 12 things. But you got to do them. And you got to do them in the order in which I suggest them to you. How many of us would not do them? What would be the dilemma? Would we say, well, I'll do one, but I want to think about the others? Or I'll do the first and the third and the 12th? Would we say, well, I'll do a couple and then we'll see? Or would we say, tell me what I can do to save my sight? There's no question, doctor, I'm going to do it. And I'm going to start the minute you tell me I can start. Only the sufferer from the disease of alcoholism refuses to take the medicine. And when Clancy said some years ago that alcoholism is a disease of perception, he could not have been more correct. What amazing, amazing. Think of that. All they say here is hardly ever does it ever fail. We've never really seen anybody fail unless they were constitutionally incapable of being honest. And I don't believe there's a person in this room who feels that they are constitutionally incapable of being honest. And those are the only ones who can't make it. Everyone else can. In our history, and everything we observe, is if you do these simple things, you will recover. Why then don't we do it? What's the big deal? What's the big deal? Why is it so hard? Is this any more less life-threatening, alcoholism, than that cancer, or that blindness, or that diabetes, or the myriad of other illnesses and diseases? Why don't we do it? And that's the dilemma that has made people wonder about alcoholics. You know that non-alcoholics see that in us? They see in us the unwillingness to get well. And that's why I think in most instances you hear about we're misunderstood and prejudiced against and they don't understand. They think we're evil and they think we're weak or they think we're this. They just observe our unwillingness to do anything but talk about it, argue about it, theorize about it, and delay simple actions. What's the big deal? I think the first thing that we do, and where I come from, guys, I'm sorry you're late. We did all the sex stuff right at the beginning. Actually, actually, we didn't. It wasn't just sex. We did masturbation to mutual funds. I think maybe because when we come in, I don't know that all of us know what an alcoholic is. And maybe we start, many of us, on the wrong foot. I don't know. I'm going to repeat, I don't know how many of you people have heard this goofy test tube thing that I do in my beginner's class back in Illinois. I'm going to do it for you. Maybe you think it's crazy. Maybe it is. I don't know. I have a group in Illinois that I belong to, and it's called the Lamont Oaks Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. About 14 years ago, after a series of misadventures in Alcoholics Anonymous, and not being able to fit into the Alcoholics Anonymous, I fell into a group of 6, 7, 8 men who were just like me, losers in Alcoholics Anonymous. And we met in a little church way out further away than you are from Lafayette or wherever we're away from. Okay? There are no visible human life where we met. Okay? Nobody could find us if they wanted to. And if you knew we were there, you wouldn't want to find us. And that's where we met. Today, that group numbers just under 500. That group. We are a group. We meet on Monday nights. We don't have a clubhouse. We don't have any buildings. We rent now a big gymnasium in a junior high school. But now we have just under 500 members of our group. See, we think group is different than meeting. We think group is the commitment to make it together. And we don't care who you are, what you are, what you do, what you don't do. We do believe, where I come from, in that little group, statistics are the measure of recovery. But we tell you that you have hardly any chance to fail if you'll stop lying and pretending. We start them out with that. And in 1980, I walked into a class, we call it a class, because we do a lot of things together in that little class. It's a class because they identify themselves as the class of 1980. Okay? You know, when you come into Alcoholics Anonymous, it's hard to become part of. You know, you come into a meeting, you're all alone, everybody seems to know each other. How do you get in? How do you get in? We get them in immediately. You belong to the class of 80. You and him and him and her. So, in 1980, I walked into that group, and there were, I don't know, 10, 12 newcomers. Monday night, last Monday night, there were 151 people in the beginner's class. 151 people who were brand new to Alcoholics Anonymous in one room. We have more beginners in our beginner's class than most meetings in the whole world have in their meeting. That doesn't mean that we're doing anything special. You can do that right here. It's called enthusiasm and truth. And I said to those people in that room, I don't know what an alcoholic is. And I had been sober at that point 10 years. I mean, I don't know what the definition of alcoholic is. And I've looked at all the books that Alcoholics Anonymous has ever written or approved. And I have never found a definition for alcoholic. Now, if I knew what an alcoholic was, I could figure out if I am one. They liked that idea. That made sense. They smile like you did. You know, even through their defiance and their pretense. Isn't that wonderful how the newcomers, you ever see newcomers come in? They always pretend they're okay. They come in as if, well, they're just visiting. They come in as if they don't have to be here. And I don't understand that. Because you know the truth of the matter is, if you don't gamble, you never think of going to a Gamblers Anonymous meeting. If you're so tired of being overweight, unless you're so tired and you feel obese, you never think of going to Overeaters Anonymous or Weight Watchers. It never dawns on you to do that. Non-alcoholics never think about coming to an AA meeting. It never enters their mind. When you think about coming to a meeting, you gotta go to a meeting. When you think you have a problem, you have a problem. And yet they'll come there and they'll be defiantly disinterested. But when I said to them that I'd like to know what an alcoholic is, because if I had a measure of definition, I could look at it, apply it to me, and maybe I'm not. And when I held that hope out to them, that maybe they weren't, they wanted to participate. Why? To be reconfirm their alcoholism? To deny their alcoholism so they could leave. And that is how 90% of all the people come into Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's why I think sometimes it's a dangerous thing to bring newcomers, and we think that if we tell them these horrible war stories, they will relate to that. So often our speakers relate to, I was in chains for 47 years in a dungeon for raping the prince's daughter. I was in prison. I murdered my best friend. I was in 37 treatment centers. I tried to kill myself 9 times. Look at the scars. I was divorced 11 times. And on and on, as if we're going to then give them something to relate to. If they're like me, most newcomers, when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't want to relate to your stories because I didn't want to be an alcoholic. I mean, I don't know anybody that I have never met anybody who wanted to be an alcoholic. I never ever met anybody who was happy they were an alcoholic, who said, my God, I fulfilled my life's dream. I've become an alcoholic. I've never seen anybody write in a yearbook, what do you want to do the rest of your life? I want to join Alcoholics Anonymous. People come to Alcoholics Anonymous with a resistance to the term alcoholic, to a resistance from the idea that they are at the end of their rope, and they come here to deny and justify that denial so they can leave. And when we tell them these terrible war stories, they say, I didn't do that. Good. I'm not an alcoholic. I've never been arrested. Shit, alcoholics are people who get arrested all the time. I've never been divorced. Well, I was, but I should have been divorced. So what does that have to do with? That guy's been divorced 7 times. They've been arrested 15 times for drunken driving. I've never been arrested. I only arrested once. And they leave these meetings reinforced that they are not like us because they spend the time in the meeting not trying to hear what they can compare to, but what they can compare against, because they don't want to be alcoholics. And I don't blame them, because I didn't want to be one either. So what we do in our meeting is we don't tell war stories. We hardly ever mention drinking. We never, in the beginner's group, ever talk about drinking. We presume you know about drinking. We presume when you walk into that room, it has something to do with drinking. We presume you know everything there is to know about drinking. We presume you are the world's authority on drinking. We presume you drink more than most people that you know, or that you, not that you like, but that you know. We presume that. That's a safe presumption. I walked into that room in 1980 and I said, what's an alcoholic? And they looked at me and I said, maybe if we find a definition, we can get out of here. They wanted to play the game. So I asked them to pretend. We're all good at pretending. We know how to do that. I said, let's pretend we're in a laboratory. Let's make an alcoholic. Let's make an alcoholic in this laboratory all by ourselves. Nobody's here. Nobody will know. Nobody will see. It's a private little secret laboratory. And I asked him just for a minute to come into that laboratory with me. And I held up an invisible test tube. I said, let's put in the ingredients that you think are necessary in order to make an alcoholic. And let's make one. When we make it, we'll look at it and we'll know if it's like us. If it is, maybe we'll want to stay. And if it isn't, we don't have to be here. And I held up an invisible test tube in 1980 to a little group of people. And I don't even remember. The truth of the matter is, they're having a reunion in November, and they sent me a picture that was taken after that meeting, and there's like 30-some of them in there. But that little group of people looked at that invisible test tube that I held up, and here's what they did. Remember now, they're not like you and me. They weren't 18, 19 years sober. They were brand new. Okay? This was their perception speaking. This was their experience speaking. They didn't know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous. They had no teaching about Alcoholics Anonymous. This was their guts talking. I said, you make me an alcoholic. I wasn't going to make it because I don't know what it is. They made this. They said, first person that spoke was a little girl who was almost more than 16 or 17 years old. She said, put in fear. This is somebody brand new to Alcoholics Anonymous, never read the book, doesn't know anything. Her guts are talking. Put in fear. Put in anxiety. Put in shame. Put in guilt. Put in depression. Put in impatience. Put in anger. Put in remorse. Put in self-loathing. Somebody else said put in ego. Put in perfectionism. Inferiority, someone said, put that in. And someone right after that said, put in superiority. Wow. Same test tube. Inferiority, superiority. I'm thinking, my God, what are they making here? Loneliness. Guilt. Negative self-image. Self-loathing. They went on and on, and that's what they put into this test tube. Now, this is a fact. This happened. This isn't made up for this meeting or any other meeting. They fill that test tube with things like that and those things. And here's the key. Do you know what those brand new people, right off the street, before we prejudice them or fed them bad information, well, you know what they did not put in? What do you think they did not put in? Alcohol. Because nobody had got to them yet to tell them. Alcohol was your problem. Nobody was there to give them that bad information. That's why the first time I heard Franklin Williams speak, it was years and years ago. He got up in front of the Evans Avenue group in Chicago. It was a big, big meeting, maybe 1,500 people. And he said, folks, there's a lot of information available in Alcoholics Anonymous. Unfortunately, most of it is bad. And I thought, I'm going to like this guy. They didn't put alcohol. Now, what we did to carry on this experiment is we then said, okay, I said to him, you know, you didn't put in any alcohol. I said, well, then let's put in some alcohol. So in our laboratory, in this invisible test tube that was full of the things they said they felt necessary ingredients to make an alcoholic, we started to pour in alcohol. And here's what they said they visioned occur. When you put just enough alcohol in a test tube that has fear in it, alcohol seems to make fear go away. It dilutes fear. They said that as we poured alcohol into the test tube, initially, anger was subsided, inferiority was corrected, superiority was diminished, guilt went away. It seemed to them that in the early drinking, when they drank, good things happened. Good feelings happened. They felt better about themselves and the people around them. They reported that alcohol, to them, used to work more often than not. Now, there are some people who do not have that experience, but the vast majority have explained that they have. See, if you have nothing in your test tube but good stuff, why do you drink? What does it do for you? Then, if you have nothing in your test tube but good things, and for some reason you drank too much too often, and then stopped, you gotta be happy. It's gotta be an end, that's the end for you. Sobriety's the name of the game. If that's true, were you drunk every day of your life? Weren't you ever sober between drunks? And if so, once you were sober, and sober is the answer, why didn't you stay sober? I don't know, because I don't understand that segment of the population. But what these people reported was very simple, that alcohol used to work for them, and it used to make them feel better about them early on. And they had forgotten about that, because they only remember the end. But they were caused to remember the beginning through this experiment. As we continued to pour alcohol into that test tube, what happens is called alcoholism, and it only happens for some people. Some people, it doesn't happen to. It never happens to social drinkers. How many people are here that have less than 6 months of continuous sobriety? Okay, hold on just a minute. Okay, all right, let me tell you a secret. If you're like me, and you're here now, you're kind of glad you're here, but you're not entirely too glad you're here. And you don't mind being here so much today, but you don't know for sure if you're going to want to be here tomorrow, or a year from tomorrow, 3 years from tomorrow, 5 years from tomorrow, 10 years from now, 15 years from tomorrow, Jesus. If you're like me, maybe when you come to Alcoholics Anonymous, you really think, I'd really like to be a social drinker. And if I could ever become a social drinker, that's all I'd ever want. All right. I'm here to tell you, if you're new and you fathom the idea that you would like to be a social drinker, I'm going to tell you a secret. If I had a pill that could make you a social drinker, it was guaranteed to make you a social drinker, you would not take the pill. You wouldn't take it. You think to yourself, oh yeah, what? Definition, what's a social drinker? If before you decide that you want to be one, let's find out what it is. No sense rushing into this. We don't want to rush into social drinking anymore. We want to rush into Alcoholics Anonymous. You can find out you're in the wrong place. Wouldn't it be terrible if social drinking is the wrong place? You ever see a social drinker? You know social drinkers do? They say to each other, stop and have a drink. They stop, they have a drink, they go on. How'd you like to live like that? Social drinkers, when they sit at the bar, bartender puts their drinks in front of them, you know what they do? They talk to each other. And then they talk some more. And the drinks are there. And they talk. Then they take a sip. Then they talk. How'd you like to live like that? One day at a time. social drinkers, when they're offered the second or third drink, know what to say? No, thank you. I'm starting to feel it. They do this all over the world. They do this in every cocktail party, in every wedding, in every reception, and in every home in the United States every night. Say, no, thank you. I've had one. You've had what? I've had one. No shit. No, thank you. I've had two. No, thank you. I've had enough. You know what they mean? You know why I say I have had enough? Because every human being that takes alcohol into their system notices change occurs. Change occurs from alcohol. Everybody feels a change that occurs. I don't care if you're in France or Tibet or Australia or New Zealand or Tahiti or San Francisco. Any human being that takes alcohol in their system notices a change starts to occur. When that change starts to occur, non-alcoholics don't like that change. Know what that change is? They start to feel different. They start to feel different. They don't want to feel different. They like how they feel. They start seeing things differently. They don't want to see things differently. They like how they see things. They like how things look to them. I drink because I don't like how I feel. I like how I see things. And when I see things, they threaten me. The world, the people, the circumstances threaten me. I don't like what I see. I don't like who I am. I don't like where I am. I don't like the pressure. I don't like the injustice. I don't like my weakness. I don't like the dilemma. I don't like the wife. I don't like the job. I don't like the lack of money. I don't like this. I don't like that. And when that starts to occur, when that change starts to occur, I don't say, no, thank you. I'm starting to feel it. I say, I'll have another. I want the change to occur. That's called alcoholism. The other is called social drinking. I couldn't be a social drinker if I wanted to be a social drinker. And I wouldn't want to be a social drinker. What a boring life. I mean, you go out, you know what's going to happen. When you're going to come home. Who you're going to come home with. You know where your car is? I mean, there's no excitement in that life. Social drinkers don't know what you and I take for granted. They never wake up and think, whose blood is that? Or who is that? Or where am I? Or why am I here? Or how did I get here? That's the difference. That's the difference. I think. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. That's how I see it. Now, what they did in that classroom, in that imaginary laboratory, we can continue that experiment. For people like me, alcohol, when first introduced, has a good effect. It seems to soothe and dilute and change and make better everything that I feel wrong, even if only momentarily. And I like that and I pursue it. Now what seems to happen and what they did in that laboratory is they continued to pour alcohol. For some small fraction of the people now alive in the world, alcohol has a different effect. not only does that change occur, but if you continue that process, and the funny thing about it is, it's different in everyone. Some people, if you continue the process for 2 years, and some people, if you continue the process for 20 years. And some people, if you put an awful lot, and some people, if you put a lot less. But for some people, if you continue to put alcohol into that system, into that test tube, to enjoy the result stops happening. Then you can't get happy all the time, comfortable all the time. Then fear doesn't always go away with three. Self-loathing, financial insecurity, pride and ego doesn't seem to be controlled with four. Non-alcoholics would say, I mean, I can't drink anymore. It's not working. They wouldn't even get that far. Alcoholics, when it stops to work, what do you think they decide? To stop drinking because it's not working? What? More, of course, more. To what? Get crazy? To get mean? To get ugly? See, that's what the world sees. As if you drink more to get mean, to destroy, to hurt, to fail. They see you drinking as if you're drinking more to get bad, to get misfortune. Why do you drink more? To get comfortable, to get happy, to relax, to make the fear go away, even for a minute, to make the bad memories go away, if just for a minute. To make a sense of self-worthlessness disappear, if only for a minute. To be able to say, who cares, and mean it just for a minute. To be able to say, I'm not afraid, and really mean it, even if just for a minute. We don't drink to destroy ourselves. It looks that way. We don't drink to ruin our lives. We want happiness more than anyone else around. Because we've never known it. And they seem to have been born with it. At least my kind of alcoholic feels that way. And if you continue that process, and you are an alcoholic, what happens, and you don't know that it's happening while it's happening, is if you keep putting in more and more and more, not only will it never dilute and soothe again, it begins to intensify everything rotten that's in there. And alcoholism then takes a reverse effect. The more you drink, the worse your life becomes. Alcohol then intensifies loneliness, intensifies shame, intensifies guilt, intensifies hopelessness, intensifies anger, intensifies financial insecurity. That's called alcoholism. And when those young, I say they weren't young, they were all mixed ages. One in that class was over 60 years old, 1980. When they made that alcoholic, I knew what an alcoholic was, of my type, and I knew I had to stay there, because that's who I am. I could tell you my life story. I have just told you my life story. I'm the test tube. I don't know about you, but I've always been different. I've always felt different. From the earliest recollection, I have felt different. And I hardly ever remember liking me. Now, do you know, I don't know if you think this is a phenomenon, but I'll tell you a secret. I know people, and I've known them all my life. And you say, who would you like to be? And they look me right in the eye without any thinking, and they say, I'd like to be me.
I think to myself, Jesus,
they just want to be them. If anybody, anytime, would have asked me, who would you like to be? I never would have thought of picking me. From my earliest recollection, when I get the crap and the justification and the pretense and the lying out of the way, when I really look at it, I never wanted to be me. I didn't like me. Early, I didn't like me. I thought I had a definition problem. When I was a kid, I thought I had a definition problem. People used terms I didn't know what they're talking about. Happy. Talk about being happy. I didn't know what happy is. When I'm 12, I didn't know what happy was. By the time I was 12, I was full of secrets. I had sexual secrets by the time I was 12. Thank you. I did things that I didn't think other little boys did. I thought about doing things I didn't think that other little boys thought about. And I did them before I was 12. I had secrets. I had a religious training when I was a kid, and I thought they told me about God. You know what I got out of religion when I was a little kid? And I don't blame any religion. I don't know they ever said these things. I got the idea that God was punishing, vindictive, God of retribution. That if you sinned, because they told me about sin, you got to pay. Because you offended God. That's what I heard. I don't know if they ever said that in my religion. And I early on knew that I offended God. How could you be happy when you know you're living a lie and you're a little kid? Comfortable. They'd use terms like comfortable. How can you be comfortable when you live with a feeling of ill at ease, inferiority, pretense, even as a young person? I love this term they use, and I knew for sure I had a definition problem. How is this one? This is a wonderful word. Everybody in the world seems to know the meaning of this word. I didn't. The word is enough. Enough. I never had enough of anything. Enough money. Enough fame. Enough power. Enough attention. Enough sex. I don't know what they mean. I don't know about enough. And everybody around me, these other people, seem to know what enough was. So I am the test tube. And the program of Alcoholics Anonymous was designed to help people like me. People whose lives were the test tube. That alcohol had a special effect for, and then alcohol stopped having that effect, and they continued to drink to get that effect, and almost died in the process. Alcoholics Anonymous is for people who are hopeless. Only hopeless people are sufficiently motivated to take actions that are contrary to the nature of people like them. And we're going to break in a minute, but I'm going to tell you a secret. Early on in Alcoholics Anonymous, they never told anyone not to drink. When they wrote the book Alcoholics Anonymous, they did not tell the prospective reader, don't drink. Early on in Alcoholics Anonymous, they never said, don't drink. Early on in Alcoholics Anonymous, they wanted to help the suffering alcoholic, because they were suffering alcoholics. They loved that alcoholic, and they didn't lie to that alcoholic. They did not say, don't drink. They said, drink, until the fight's gone. drink until the denial is gone. Drink. They say drink. It's in the 12 and 12, and it's in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. Drink, Charlie. Drink, Alice. We're not here to convince you not to drink. You drink as much as you want to. Have a good time. Hello, hello, goodbye, goodbye. Drink until you can't drink anymore. And when you're hopeless and feel helpless, you will be susceptible to a thing called recovery. Because we drank till we were hopeless and felt helpless, and we became susceptible then to a thing called recovery. And why do we spend, and maybe you don't do that here, but I know when I go around, even in Chicago and everywhere else I go, there's all these people telling people, don't drink. If you don't become hopeless and helpless, you're never going to do anything about your illness. Only hopeless, helpless people will be sufficiently motivated to find the ability to, for once, become honest, and then to thoroughly follow the path of the people who have recovered. Only hopeless, thoroughly hopeless people will ever take the steps. The only suggested program of recovery available to us. So I think sometimes when we tell people don't drink, it's because we don't want them to hurt themselves. But until they do, they won't want to help themselves. And that's harsh truth. Alcoholics Anonymous is not preventive medicine. It says in this book, you gotta hit bottom. We can't keep you three steps from bottom. You gotta do what you gotta do. And when you're tired of doing it, we got the answer. That's why I don't argue with newcomers. I don't defend Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't tell them not to drink. I tell them, drink. If it's working and you think it'll work, drink, because maybe it will. And if it doesn't, come on back. Then shut up when you come back and listen. Let's take a break, okay? Something now. That's one side of a coin. Now let's flip the coin over. When people who are new to alcohol,